Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us here today. So Antonio Brown almost got tossed out of the game the other day because of his shoes.
Is that Spike Lee quote from one of those shoe commercials from years ago? Money, it's got to be the shoes.
I completely understand how the NFL feels about uniforms. I do. But at the same time, I mean, he had pictures of his kids in the shoes. This league is struggling right now. And I never thought I'd say the NFL was struggling.
I'm just curious. Never. I'm just curious who made the shoes and how they created them. They looked really cool.
Yes, but not cool enough
for the guys on
Park Avenue.
That's right.
Weren't exactly cool enough for the Park Avenue group. And again, I understand about uniforms. I do. For example, one thing that really impressed Joe Paterno when he went to a Yankees game, he told me a couple times, and he told me this story on a couple different occasions. The Yankees were playing the Cardinals, so it was obviously had to be a World Series game. And the Yankees came out, pinstripes, black shoes, polished. They look good. Cardinals came out baggy, dirt all over the shoes, some dirt in the cap, things like that. And that's why, if you notice for Penn State over the years, the black shoes always would get polished on Friday night. The helmets would get polished on a Friday night. Spider Caldwell, Kirk Deal, and the managers, that is what they would do. And I think I said Friday. They would start doing this on Thursday night because Friday didn't do any, you know, there was never practice here on Friday. And here, I mean, they do walkthroughs on Friday with their helmets on, but that's it. And I mean, that's all they do. Joe, with one or two exceptions, did not practice on Friday. So on Thursday night, they would start the process of polishing the helmets, making sure that the blue stripe down the center was perfect, and they would polish the shoes black. You'll notice Notre Dame will paint the helmets Thursday, Friday as well, every week, to give it that shine. Because they want to have that professional look of the uniform. So that I do understand. But the NFL is a real problem right now where every time that they turn around, they're making a call that is not exactly lighting people up. And that's a problem. And it's, you know what? And the NFL, for the first time in a long time, is now hitting a ratings rut. Now, do I want all sorts of wild and crazy out there? I mean, remember, D'Angelo Williams last year wanted to continue to wear, I don't know, pink gloves, pink shoes. I think it was pink shoes and pink gloves, right?
Cameron Hayward, too. He had the eye black, and he wanted to write a message on there dedicated to his dad. Got called out on that, too.
Yeah, can't do that.
No.
Of course, it goes all the way back to Jim McMahon and the headbands he wore. He finally wore one that said Roselle. He also had one that one headband, the one to strike out juvenile diabetes. Awful that you would even consider wearing a headband like that. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, why would you want to draw attention to that? And you know, of course, I'm tongue-in-cheek here. But this is, I mean, and again, I understand uniforms and what the definition of uniform means. But these are all positive expressions of some sort. D'Angelo Williams want to continue wearing pink to continue the awareness of breast cancer. Cameron Haywood wanted to wear something in an eye black in tribute to his dad. Antonio Brown wanted to wear shoes because he loves his kids. All three of them, absolute unmitigated goal. You know I'm kidding. I just don't. I understand uniforms, but the NFL has not. The NFL, in terms of image, when's the last positive thing that they did that made you sit back and go, wow, that's really cool? Name it. How they handled the Hardy thing? No. How they handled the Ray Rice thing? No. How they handled the Brady thing? No. How they handled D'Angelo Williams? No. How they handled the Kaepernick thing? No. How they've handled the Cameron Hayward? No. How they handled the Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, James Harrison deal? No. There isn't one thing that they haven't handled anything in the last. How they handled Adrian Peterson? What have they handled right now in 2.5 years? It's starting to get to the point where they're turning people off. The Sunday night game, the ratings, it was not a great game. It was the Bears and the Cowboys. Ratings were off. Now, Monday night football, you expected to get buried, and it did get buried. I mean, the debate did not draw the numbers that they thought it would. People thought the debate would draw, what, about 100 million? It drew 84 million. So, I mean, that was way off. Because think about this, that means only 1 in 4 Americans actually watched the debate.
Well, still the highly most watched debate of all time.
Yeah, but again, you're telling everybody 100 million.
Right, they're saying this is going to be Super Bowl numbers here. Yeah.
Right. It's at 84 million watched, and that also means 1 in 4 Americans watched. I can do the math. But Monday Night Football got buried. They've been throwing out a series of mediocre games, thinking that markets carry the day. Steelers and the Eagles did pretty well. I think that game was off 1% from last year. Fox's 1 o'clock games, by the way, were all up 3%. That was actually good, but the CBS games all were off significantly. So they're not off to a great start in what I thought was a bulletproof league a couple of years ago. I mean, I remember saying on this show 3-4 years ago, I said, man, you really are going to have to botch this thing up badly to botch it up. And to their credit, they've taken that road. You know, Jack and I were talking the other day. The two of us would rather watch a college football game than watch a pro football game. You know that?
Now, there's just something about the tradition, the passion, the splendor.
The excitement of it.
Oh, yeah.
The excitement of it, how different it is. The NFL is very homogenized. Those are all things that we talked about. The Big Ten has made a statement on targeting. We will tell you about that in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Imagine feeling the raw power of a 400-horsepower twin-turbo V6. And match that with all-wheel drive and the ultimate in comfort and technology. Experience the zen-like feeling for yourself. Stop by our showroom and experience this incredible American luxury vehicle, the new 2017 Lincoln MKZ. It's more than a car, it's an experience. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury is waiting for you to come and experience the complete lineup of Lincoln luxury vehicles. Sunbury Motors is making that luxury an affordable reality with 0% financing for 60 months and $1,000 cash back on 2016 Lincoln MKX. And 0% financing for 60 months and $3,500 cash back on 2016 MKZ hybrids. Comfort, performance, style, and luxury are all made affordable at the Susquehanna Valley's home for affordable American luxury, Sunbury Motors Lincoln. Check out our inventory online at sunburylincoln.com or visit us today in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
All of you who live in Winfield, all of you that love Lewisburg High School, here's the Big Ten recently released statement within the last 10 minutes on targeting calls. During Saturday's Penn State-Michigan football game, a Penn State defensive player was ejected for targeting with 14:55 remaining in the second quarter. We do not find fault with the flag that was thrown by the on-field officials as they are instructed to prioritize player safety when making calls. As you know, I absolutely agree with that statement. All right, now let's get to the next part. Targeting occurs when a player takes aim at an opponent, whether the crown of the helmet is used to make forcible contact to the head or neck area of a defenseless opponent, or whether there is forcible contact to the head or neck area of a defenseless opponent that goes beyond making a legal tackle, a legal block, or playing the ball. In this particular play, the defender was making a legitimate attempt to get the ball, and upon further review, the call of targeting should have been reversed by the replay official. Prior to the 2016 season, the NCAA granted additional authority to replay officials when reviewing on-field targeting calls by changing the standard of review. As a result, the replay official now has the authority to re-officiate and review all aspects of the on-field targeting call. And in the absence of specific indicators identified by the NCAA targeting standards, the replay official can reverse the call on the field. Additionally, replay officials have it. The ability and responsibility to independently review potential targeting plays that are egregious and not seen or called on the field, and protecting health and safety of our students will continue to be the highest priority. Okay? So that's a statement they put out on it from the Big Ten. And by the way, they can also take away the personal foul penalty. So I will tell you one area where I got it wrong, and I will tell you straight out where I got it wrong. As I said in the broadcast, that he'd have to miss the first half of this week's game with Minnesota. That is not true. Because the penalty occurred in the first half, and thus he was suspended for the rest of the game, including the entire second half. All right?
Then that covers it.
All right, he's done. He can start the game Saturday. Okay?
So if it would have been in like the third quarter, then it would have spilled over then into this week.
If it was 14:59 to go in the third quarter, he would have been out the first half of this week's game. So I am the one that made that mistake in terms of the interpretation of the rule, and I said that on the broadcast. So I want to make sure that you know. All right. So Brandon can play the entire game on Saturday, and he will start at middle linebacker Saturday. It'll be him with Manny Bowen and Cam Brown. Those will be the starting linebackers. And Cooper will back up two of those spots. Cole Farmer backs up a spot, and we'll go from there. I have maintained the entire time that I was completely for what the back judge did. The back judge is only doing what he's supposed to do on that play, all right? So he makes a quick bang-bang call as to what happens on the play. At that point, it goes to the booth because the back judge sees Grant Perry's head, boom, go left to right. So he thinks that the head has been hit. All right? So that's why he throws the flag. So there's nothing wrong with what the back judge did. Zero. What is wrong is that the replay official just flat out got it wrong. He should have done two things in the play. He should have wiped out the targeting call and the personal foul. Should have been fourth down, should have been a field goal attempt. Or fourth down, maybe they would have gone for it. I don't know. They were going for it repeatedly all day. But that's what they should have done. And that's what they're saying here. What they're saying here is that, you know, the call was wrong. What really struck me about the call on that play was how quickly they made the call. I mean, Jack and I looked at it and went, oh, well, he's going for the ball. And I get these wrong all the time. I'm watching the Foster Farms Bowl last year. Nebraska kid goes up, hits him high, hits him in the shoulder pads. I'm like, ah, okay, he's fine. He'll stay in the game. That's just a legit high tackle. Nope, throw him out. You're like, what are you doing here? Yeah, Michigan, Michigan State last year. Michigan State player pushes Joe Bolden, the Michigan linebacker, who then falls into the pile and hits the other guy. They throw Bolden out for targeting. Because I looked at it and went, well, he got pushed in. It's obvious. Not his fault. Oh, tossed him. Then they do this. Man, if they're going to go to the booth and they're going to replay all this stuff, take a good look at it and use your common sense. It's the same thing with dropping the football. I mean, the Oklahoma kid, do you realize he dropped the ball like a yard and a half out of the end zone? A yard and a half. Were you on a donut run? What are you doing?
I've seen no less than three major football games in the first month of the season where that's happened.
Absolutely. Hey, take a look. Replay it. Bill Lemonnier, who's an outstanding official, he's going to be, for those of you who watch Blue-White Tailgate, which is, I think it's on the cable system, right? You got a chance to watch it there, right? I think it's on the Wilkes-Barre station.
I've been looking for it on the My Network TV on Wilkes-Barre. I've been looking for it on my guide, and I haven't seen it yet this season. I don't know if it's on at a weird time or not.
Well, it's too bad because Andrew Calista this week is going to interview Bill Lemonnier. And he sees it exactly the way we see it. He did give a really good explanation about the Stanford-UCLA thing. What was really odd about the Stanford-UCLA thing is that they were not one time looking at the replay for targeting. You know what they were looking for? They were looking to see whether he caught it and it was a fumble. Huh? But because he's a runner, he's not considered to be defenseless. All right. Look, if they're going to give you the time to go to the booth, use your time responsibly. They made the call on Smith so quickly. When they made the call quickly on Brandon Smith, you know what my first thought was? Oh, okay. My first thought was, oh, they already have it. Obviously, it's what we thought. It's no big deal. I mean, that's what I thought because it was so fast. And they threw him out. And Jack and I looked at each other like, what is going on here? Who's running this show?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's going to be a great show. As you know, I've mentioned before, I grew up, my father had a sheet metal fabrication shop, which my brother brilliantly runs today. My brother's an incredibly skilled welder, sheet metal man, press brake, all that stuff. And gave him a blueprint, he'll make it in seconds. I mean, when I was younger, I could do that. People who have the ability to do exactly what Mark was just talking about, have my immense respect. Immense respect.
By the way, still waiting to hear back from your brother. I sent him a message regarding what game he could come down this weekend.
So, yeah. He doesn't know.
Oh, I said to him, I was like, yeah, we were talking about you on the show yesterday. He goes, oh, what did I do now? I go, no. Your brother wants to see you.
He's been nothing but a success of the show.
Yeah.
What did I do now? Okay, now it's another inside into our upbringing, the two of us. All right, what do we do now?
Well, I know I have his work number, his home number. Now, does he have a cell phone? I was going to say I sent him an email. I would have texted him that question. But
look, he has a cell number, but like the odds of him ever like seeing it,
right?
It's just not.
Okay.
It's not in his bag.
Yeah.
Once in a while, he will text me during the game. But yeah, I think he'll send me a series of texts during the game. But he does realize that I don't take my cell phone into the game. I get in there. I just get in there and just do my deal. It's my own way of.
By the way, to parlay on what we were talking about before the bottom of the hour regarding the Big Ten Conference announcement on the Brandon Smith ejection. By the way, we have the information now posted on stevejonesshow.com if you want to see that.
Yep.
But your brother said the worst call in the history of college football.
I may have seen a couple others that were worse, but this wasn't great.
Top of mind awareness, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. This day in sports history, Jordan Rodrigue, by the way, next hour, Sunday Daily Times, on Penn State football. 1892, the first nighttime football game in the U.S. took place under electric lights. Game was played between Mansfield State Normal School and Wyoming Seminary. Maybe if Doug in Wellsboro gives us a call, we can find out if Mansfield State is still a normal school. Just kidding. 1919, the Giants beat the Phillies 6-1 in a day game. Now remember, this is late in the season, right? The game lasted 51 minutes. 1941, Ted Williams of the Red Sox. Finished the year at 406, last major league player to ever hit 400 in a season. He was hitting 399.6, 399.7, something like that, which rounded to 400. And Joe Cronin, the manager, was going to sit him. He said, yeah, Ted, you've done enough. And he refused. And they played a doubleheader, and he went 6-for-8 and finished at 406. It was also on this date in 1960 that he had a home run in his final at-bat. Other than that, let's see. 1995, Randy Myers of the Cubs was charged by a 27-year-old man while standing in the outfield. Myers saw him coming, dropped his glove, and knocked him with a forearm. Today, the guy would have sued. Right? What was that? The movie Liar, Liar? With Jim Carrey? And there's that point he can't lie. And gets into a fight with his personal assistant. And she says that my friend, someone broke into her house and like she did something to him. And the burglar sued and got $1 million. She says, what do you think of that? And he says, I would have gotten him too. Today that guy would have run out in the outfield, would have been decked, probably would have sued Randy Myers. Right. The targeting again. The Big Ten says, and I agree with everything they wrote in there. By the way, yeah, I want to point out the back judge who threw the flag was absolutely right to throw the flag because all he's doing is starting the process of review. That's all he's doing. He's starting the process of review, and if the replay official uses common sense and sees Brandon's going for the ball, he can wipe out the personal foul and also wipe out the targeting call. Okay. The problem comes in is that that's not what the replay official did. And that's what the Big Ten says went wrong. Well, obviously it did go wrong. Now, does it affect the game? No. I mean, Michigan's the better team on this particular day. There's no question about that. But B. Smith, by the way, will start against Minnesota on Saturday. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. I guess we lost that caller. So if you want to jump in and make your comments at 1-800-795-9565, you can. But again, the official throwing the flag on what is, you know, everything's quick, all right? So they throw the flag. And it's fine. They throw the flag with the idea that they have a backup system. And that's what they're doing. So the on-field official is not, in my opinion, remotely at fault in this. It's the replay official. What bothers me about the replay officials, I feel like over the last few years, they've made some calls that Jack and I have looked at, and we're like, what? What call is that? Now, some are really, really close. That's why, for example, you always have the out, and the out always is when you hear the verbiage, play stands as called. That's the out. That's the out. All right. We believe he attended the first night game. Doug and Weld, we believe that a relative of yours was there.
At the first night game?
Yes, 1892. Mansfield Normal College against Wyoming Ceremony. We think a Doug and Wellsboro relative went to the game.
Nobody up here is normal, for one thing.
When are you going to show up at a game and meet face-to-face? You're a riot.
I don't know, Steve. I kind of always liked it this way. We've never met, so I've always kind of liked listening to the radio. So,
well, you know what, Doug? You're just like all the other people out there when it comes to me. It's a lot better like this.
You've got a face for radio, Steve. I know that. They still reenact the Mansfield night game. They just did it last Saturday night.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, they do it every year. It's part of 1890s weekend up here, and okay. Actually ESPN3 carries it. It's just the college kids. I only think they play like a half or something.
Oh, that's really cool. They do that. I was actually in Mansfield the day after the Kent State game, as a matter of fact. So I was actually up there. I thought of you actually as I went through. We had to stop and we got a quick bite to eat and kept going.
Hey, I do have a question for you, Steve.
Sure, Doug.
Franklin keeps bringing up about the second youngest team in NCAA.
Yep.
Is that true? And what's he basing that on?
It is true, and it's based on the entire roster that you have. The fact that Penn State only has 11 seniors on the team, and also the number of redshirt juniors. Then after that, everything's true freshmen, redshirt sophomores, true sophomores, so forth. So it's just about how heavily weighted on the backside that Penn State is right now with the roster, because they don't have a lot of upperclassmen on the roster. That's how it's happened.
Where's the bulk of it right now? Are they freshmen, sophomores? Where's the bulk of the talent going to come from?
Well, the bulk of the talent in this team is going to come from three classes, Doug. It's going to come from the freshmen, the redshirt freshmen, and from the sophomores. I mean, the redshirt sophomores, that's where it's going to come from on this team. And it's just, that's all part of this process of trying to bring it back, because Bill O'Brien, one year, could only recruit 11 guys. So because they had to keep it under 65, that's what they could do. So this is what's happened. That's still a domino effect that you're trying to fight your way through right now, is that you're trying to play some guys that are maybe aren't quite ready to play. I've given him a lot of credit for redshirting the way he has, because I think long-term it's the right thing to do. Short-term, it might buy you a game, but I'm not so sure we'd benefit all the guys that would attempt to play.
Are we eventually at some point, what, 2, 3, 5 years going to get back to the Ohio State-Michigan level that we were at one point? I mean, right now, you saw what you saw on Saturday. You saw Michigan State last year, Ohio State every year. Give me some hope that 5 years down the line, they're going to be competing in the Big Ten East.
Well, I'm going to stick with, Doug, what I've said really the entire time, and I think you probably know what I'm about to say. I have felt strongly that the turning point year where it starts to begin to turn in the direction you're talking about, not completely there, but starts to turn in the direction that we're talking about, was 2017. I think it's actually that close, where it starts to turn in that direction, where now you're starting to close the gap, where you have positional balance, athletic balance, and a better class balance. Right now, they're so balanced, as we just talked about, to the one side of it. I mean, this is all the process of trying to get the thing back to normal. And, I mean, do you think I wish that they could be back to normal right now? Boy, you better believe it. But I also see it on an everyday basis. They'll benefit, for example, by redshirting Will Fries and Michael Mennett this year. They'll benefit by it. Because Fries and Mennett are both really good, but are they quite ready to play now without maybe playing and then would it hurt their progress? No, that's why you hold them out, because I think if they played them now, they would help, but there would be areas where it hurt their progress as players. So that's why you redshirt them. So that's part of the process. I've maintained the entire set time that 17, I thought, was going to be the year that we start to see a little bit of that turn that you're talking about, and I'm going to stick with it because I still think that's what it's on track to be.
Will the university back Franklin long enough to get it turned around, or are they going to? I mean, he's in year three of a 5 year, right? And he's going to ask for an extension this year, next year, sometime.
His deal is for six. His deal's for six. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and look, nobody else has been in this position where you really had to be, okay, guide me through a couple of caretaker years, where you've got 65 guys, then you got 75 guys. And that's what he had to do, was to kind of take them through that caretaking period. And now he's allowed to at least start building a program in a more normal fashion after trying to play catch-up for 2, 3 years. The problem is you're trying to play catch-up for 3 years. And you also have to make sure that let's take the 11-person recruiting class that Bill O'Brien had. You can't make any mistakes with that. And it turns out you and I both know they made a couple of mistakes with it. And then Franklin got so late into the recruiting game at Penn State to start out with, which is typical of any coach when they take a job, that you get in late into the recruiting process of it. So now you're just scrambling to fill spots the best you can. So, I mean, all this starts to add up. And right now, everybody's down to what they're seeing, but there's some logic that I see on an everyday basis that makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've both been with him for a long time. We were through the dark years with Joe, 2001, 2, 3, 4, the early 2000s.
Yep.
I just hope they give Franklin time enough. I guess he's the guy. They need the talent, so I guess they just give him cover enough to, or support him enough, long enough to get show some progress and get it turned around, because right now they're so far away from these other guys.
Well, see, I mean, this is what we've seen, the opposite at USC. They pull the plug on everybody every chance they get to get going anywhere, and they went through the similar sanctions. They're 1-3 right now. And they went through sanctions, not to the depth of Penn State, but still went through sanctions, and that's why Cody Kessler had 3 fewer sacks than Christian Hackenberg over the same 3-year period, 103 to 100. That's why they had similar records to Penn State in each of these years. And right now they're 1-3. Penn State's 2-2. I mean, they're really on parallel paths right now. And sometimes you have to point out what happened to somebody else that might be in a similar ballpark as to where you are right now.
Yep, you're right. You're right about that stuff. Hey, I changed my mind. I'll meet you face to face if I get a job interview for your spotter.
Perfect.
Well, considering, or do I send my resume?
I mean, yeah, you might as well, because I don't have one.
And I know.
Had one
I know.
For years. That's why I laughed. I read an article in a magazine where Dean DeVore, the public address announcer of the stadium, has two. Really? I didn't know, because I don't know what goes on down there. He has two spotters. I thought, well, okay. I guess they feel it's one for him, one for me, and you got them both.
The show has noticeably improved since the suit has been moved on for temporary purposes. Sean's doing an excellent job.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that.
You're absolutely right about Sean. And as for the suit, we're just hoping he makes
quota.
Enough money this month. Quota would be good. Quota? Anybody?
Bueller?
All right. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Do we have time to go to Dick and Milton now, Sean, or should we take a break?
Well, let's take a quick break.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll get to Dick and Milton in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Dick and Milton has patiently waited. Dick, thanks so much. Appreciate the patience very much, my friend.
That's okay, Steve. I wanted to ask you, I missed the very beginning, or probably most of your review of that Brandon Smith play. Did you say that they had the replay booth in the Michigan Athletic Director's office?
It seemed to be in the same general area.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, like, listen, I've seen more reviews this year than ever in baseball and some in football, but in Little League, I mean Little League baseball, and they literally got every review, every play correct. And the two or three that weren't, they reversed on this. Well, after a long review, that review only took seconds. Literally seconds.
And see, I don't. This is the part I don't get. I don't get I'm really confused. I get them all wrong on TV when I watch the reviews of targeting. I get them all wrong.
Well, irrespective of that, but even in Little League Baseball, they took longer to review those plays in Little League Baseball than they took in that Big Ten football game. And that, to me, is unbelievable.
Yeah, I was shocked at how quick it was and the fact that he was out. Jack and I looked at each other like, and I asked him, Jack, I said, could you have played defense in this era with this? And he said, no.
I guess the other thing, though, I've seen kids hit in soccer harder than that. So,
agreed. And look, he's trying to pick the ball off. I mean, I had a great question asked to me yesterday. What if he had intercepted it?
Well,
it wasn't
the guys
that
on TV,
far off.
The guys in TV said, what about if the receiver hits somebody that hard going for the ball? What do they do? Get the targeting?
Exactly.
I'll let you go there. It was a terrible call.
It sure was. And as Judy, by the way, said, well, it's too late now. And Judy, you're right. But we're just passing along the news that's what they ruled. And I feel the same way you do. That's about 72 to 96 hours too late. I mean, when you've got time to make the call, make the right call.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.